Breaking news tonight. 22 million more Americans will be without health insurance under the Senate GOP plan. The new nonpartisan report, how sharp Medicaid reductions could impact so many middle-class families. Travel ban fight. The Supreme Court weighs in as President Trump scores a partial victory. Nightmare flight. New details on what may have caused a plane to shake so violently for nearly 2 hours. Passengers say the pilot told them to pray. Fire emergency exploding out of control across 7 states as millions bake under a deadly heat wave. Gut check. Millions are taking them hoping for better digestion and even a clearer complexion. Tonight, the reality on probiotics and the proposal bringing so many to tears. Why he got down on his knee not once, but twice. Nightly news begins right now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening to our viewers in the West. Great to have you with us on this Monday. There are two big stories playing out this evening that are putting key parts of the Trump agenda on the line, including the U.S. Supreme Court allowing parts of the president's travel ban to go into effect for now. But we start with a major new wrinkle in the fight to win passage of a health care bill in the Senate. The Independent Congressional Budget Office has crunched the numbers on the Republican plan and tonight estimates 22 million Americans could lose their health coverage over the next 10 years. Already facing mounting reluctance in their own party, Republican leaders are still insisting on getting a vote this week. Our coverage starts with NBC's Casey Hunt.
Health care for 22 million people hanging in the balance. That's how many could lose coverage over the next decade under the Senate health care bill. According to the new nonpartisan analysis from the Congressional Budget Office out late today, for the senators deciding how to vote, it's millions more uninsured than many had hoped.
If you're on the fence, I'm not so sure this report helps you much.
Obviously, it's not good news, and so it'll have to be a factor.
Democratic Senator Brian Schatz tweeting, CBO confirms this thing is a bleep sandwich. But the analysis also estimates the cuts to Medicaid will help save $321 billion over the next 10 years. And that gives Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell more room to negotiate, even as he faces protests in the ranks.
I would like to delay the thing. There's no way we should be voting on this next week. No way.
Senator Ron Johnson is one of 5 Republicans who say they'll vote no without changes. With 52 Senate Republicans, only 3 no votes would sink the bill, and many are still undecided.
Are you a yes on the health care vote bill or a no? Have you decided yet?
No, I'm still, you know, I read it this weekend, and there's still focusing on it.
The president on the phone this weekend with conservatives and moderates, a delicate balancing act.
You move it this way, and this group doesn't like it. You move it a little bit over here. You have a very narrow path.
The clock is ticking. After today's score, Tuesday and Wednesday will see last-minute changes. Then votes on Democratic amendments, likely late into the night. Before, if all goes to plan, final passage Thursday or Friday. But today, more signs of trouble. The American Medical Association saying the Republican plan violates the first rule of medicine, do no harm. With no Democrats on board?
Republicans would be wise to read it like a giant stop sign.
Republicans anxious to fulfill a promise 7 years in the making.
And late word tonight that a 6th Republican, Senator Susan Collins of Maine, is a no, tweeting that the Medicaid cuts would hurt people in her state. And that makes the climb to 50 votes for Senate Republicans all that much harder. Lester.
All right, Casey, thank you. And as you noted, among the proposals in the Senate health care bill are some steep cuts to Medicaid over the long term. Supporters say the changes are necessary to save the program. But some health care providers say the effects would be devastating to the 1.4 million Americans living in nursing homes. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez has a closer look.
These days, Jane Hale is worried.
It's really scary because you don't know what's going to happen.
The 74-year-old has been living in this nursing home near Chicago for 11 years, first on private insurance, now on Medicaid.
How crucial is Medicaid to your life?
If I didn't have Medicaid, I don't know where I'd go. My children do not have room for me. They have families of their own.
But the Senate health care bill, with its changes to Medicaid, could hit nursing homes especially hard.
Two-thirds of residents in long-term care facilities rely on Medicaid as their main source of funding.
The costs are already staggering and expected to grow 6% a year from $389 billion now to $650 billion in a decade. Many Republicans say slowing the growth of Medicaid is crucial to saving it.
We need that in order to make the program viable and to deal with these massive deficits and the mounting debt that we have.
Medicaid covers 20% of Americans.
Many people that are perfectly middle class or even upper middle class when they retire, by the time they find themselves 80 or 85, they've spent down and they don't have any funds.
I think that the people that are trying to do the cuts ought to stop and think, what if it was their mother? Where would you want them to be?
A question she hopes Washington will consider. Gabe Gutierrez, NBC News, Westmont, Illinois.
And as we previewed at the top of the broadcast, the other big story tonight, the battle over President Trump's travel ban has reached the Supreme Court, which has agreed to hear President Trump's appeal of lower court rulings against the ban. And the court said the government can begin enforcing at least part of it in the meantime. It's a partial victory for the president. We get details now from our justice correspondent, Pete Williams.
For the first time in 5 months, a legal win, at least a partial one, for President Trump after a series of setbacks that blocked enforcement of his executive order on travel. The court granted his appeal of two lower court decisions against it and said some of it can now be enforced. A 90-day pause on issuing visas for travel to the U.S. from six Muslim countries associated with terrorism. The White House has insisted that to protect national security, it must use the pause to assess the reliability of background information provided by those countries on visa applicants. A clear victory, President Trump says, adding, "I cannot allow people into our country who want to do us harm." The court was unanimous on agreeing to take up the president's appeals, but by a vote of 6-3, it agreed with the lower courts that the travel ban cannot be enforced against anyone seeking a visa who has a close relative here, or wants to come here to study or teach, or is coming here to accept a job offer. That means anyone in those categories can still apply for a visa. That's why the challengers say this is a legal win for them.
President Trump, you can't enforce the refugee ban. You can't enforce the Muslim ban against those people who are connected to the United States, which has always been the heart of our challenge.
Three of the court's conservatives, Justices Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch, said they would have allowed the entire executive order to be enforced with no exceptions. Groups sponsoring refugees from the six countries say it's not all good news for them.
I think we're most concerned about individuals who perhaps do not have any ties or family relationships to the United States of America and what it's going to mean for them.
The travel restrictions last only 90 days, and the court won't hear the case until October. By then, the case could be dismissed as moot, no longer a live controversy. Also today, two developments on religious freedom. The court ruled that states cannot refuse to give taxpayer money to churches, especially for programs of general public benefit, like making playgrounds safer. And the court said it will hear an appeal in the fall from a Denver baker who says that having to bake cakes for same-sex weddings violates his religious freedom. Lester?
Pete Williams at the Supreme Court, thank you. President Trump today raised some eyebrows by leveling explosive new allegations against his predecessor. While Mr. Trump acknowledged Russia's meddling in the U.S. election, he placed blame on Mr. Obama, accusing him of purposely doing nothing about it. NBC News White House correspondent Kristen Welker has details.
Tonight, President Trump unleashing a new tactic on the Russia controversy, pointing the finger at President Obama.
If he had the information, why didn't he do something about it?
After never firmly acknowledging Russia meddled in the 2016 race, now the president can't stop talking about it. In a tweet storm today, writing, "The real story is that President Obama did nothing after being informed in August about Russian meddling, alleging President Obama colluded or obstructed without evidence." This after a Washington Post report found Mr. Obama struggled to respond to Russia's meddling, concerned in part about the appearance of helping Hillary Clinton. But one Obama official saying, "I feel like we sort of choked. Mr. Obama did take some action, a warning to President Putin, and a new round of sanctions after the election." Candidate Trump seemed to be egging Russia on about hacking Hillary Clinton campaign emails.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing.
So why is he now blaming his predecessor?
How can you accuse President Obama of obstructing when he was egging Russia on?
He was joking at the time. We all know.
He was joking? He said that as a candidate, and he was pressed during that press conference over and over again.
I understand. And I think the idea was that you had Hillary Clinton with a secret server. That's probably a bigger concern right now in terms of what they were doing and the lack of security that they had.
Tonight, we've also learned Russia's ambassador to the U.S. is returning to Russia. U.S. officials say it's a long-planned move that predates his now highly scrutinized conversations with Trump aides. Lester.
Kristen Welker at the White House, thank you. There's some new information out tonight on an air scare as investigators in Australia look into what caused an engine on an Air Asia flight to come apart while the plane was in flight, shaking the plane violently for the better part of 2 hours until the crew could make it over land and make an emergency landing. Here's NBC's Tom Costello.
For the passengers on board Air Asia 237, a terrifying flight as a malfunctioning engine violently shook the plane from nose to tail. The captain appealing for prayers and calm.
Survival depends on your cooperating.
It's a cultural thing, but it is not something that I would have done. My point would have been to reassure the passengers that everything was under control.
The Airbus A330 carrying 359 people had departed Perth, Australia for Malaysia. Suddenly, at 38,000 feet, a compressor fan blade in the left side engine fractured and broke apart, spewing pieces of metal throughout the engine and causing significant damage. This photo shows the missing blade and the damage to the surrounding blades. The crew quickly shut the engine down, but the airflow caused the fan to continue spinning, sending violent vibrations through the plane as it flew safely back to Perth on a single engine, something all twin-engine planes are designed for.
We all thought, you know, we're just going to go down.
AirAsia says it's conducting an investigation with engine manufacturer Rolls-Royce. Engine failures are rare and usually not as serious as last October's explosion of fire on an American 767 in Chicago. Everybody got off safely. Among the questions tonight, why did the pilot fly all the way back to Perth rather than divert to a closer airfield? Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
Now to the unfolding triple threat gripping much of the country this evening, from Texas to California. Across several states, wildfires are raging. A deadly heat wave is blanketing millions, and rivers are overflowing from snowmelt. Perhaps the most serious threat may be those fires kicking out of control as the sun goes down and the wind picks up. NBC News national correspondent Miguel Almaguer is in the fire zone tonight.
This is what firefighters call a recipe for disaster. Fast-moving flames fanned by hot winds torching through dry terrain.
Oh, my God, look at that.
Residents wow, racing to evacuate scary. Just outside Los Angeles
that
late Sunday.
So
the inferno within feet of destroying an entire neighborhood.
It's pretty scary thinking that, you know, your house could burn down.
Tonight, 21 large wildfires are exploding across 7 western states, the biggest and most destructive in Utah, where more than a dozen homes have been lost.
You feel so bad for the ones that have lost already. I just can't believe it.
Fueling fire, record-breaking heat. Today, 16 million are under advisories. This day 10 of a deadly heat wave. At least 14 children killed in hot cars this year, including 2 in Texas over the weekend. And now the scorching temperatures are triggering another problem. Rivers raging from snowmelt. Near Sacramento, this daring rescue, a swimmer stranded, no time to spare. Tonight, across the West, a triple threat, ferocious flames, killer heat, and dangerous currents.
With tens of thousands of acres scorched across this region, temperatures in some areas remain in the triple digits. The homes in this neighborhood were teetering on the edge of disaster. The good news, the temperatures here will drop in the coming days. The bad news, the winds will remain a serious problem. Lester.
All right, Miguel Almaguer tonight. Thank you. Tonight, several people are still missing as divers search for bodies after a deadly tourist boat disaster in Colombia. A ferry packed with over 150 people capsized. The tragic scene captured on camera. NBC's Gotti Schwartz has the latest.
Screams of panic as a ferry 4 levels high, loaded with 150 passengers, quickly sinks. Today, the stories of survival are harrowing.
I grabbed my partner by the hair and began swimming. I couldn't see anything.
Cell phone video capturing the sinking ferry dropping two floors underwater. In the chaos, at least seven dead, including this woman's mother. Survivors say they heard an explosion near the bathrooms just minutes into the cruise.
No es por sobrecupo.
This did not take place because of overcrowding. The boat sank very quickly, and this leaves us with a great question mark.
3 years ago, a South Korean ferry sank, killing more than 300 people. That captain sentenced to life in prison for negligence. Tonight in Colombia, rescuers search for the missing. Still no word on whether charges will be filed against the captain who survived, his daughter among the dead. Gadi Schwartz, NBC News.
We've got more to tell you about tonight. Still ahead, probiotic supplements. They promise everything from better digestive health to cures for disease. But can they really do all that? We've got a reality check from doctors when we come back. Back now with the latest buzzword in nutrition. They promise cures from disease, digestive health, even a clearer complexion. And more Americans are consuming probiotics in foods or taking them as supplements. But are they the miracle cure for all that ails you? Our Kristen Dahlgren has a reality check from doctors.
I'm taking the Activia 2-week probiotic challenge.
These days, you can't turn on the TV or walk down a supermarket aisle without being bombarded by probiotic promises.
Feel like a billion.
The so-called good bacteria in almost everything from fruit juice to expensive supplements. An almost $40 billion industry.
Your regular size? Okay, you got it.
Business is booming for Megan and Shane Carpenter.
Every month we're growing.
Who make probiotic-rich fermented foods like kimchi, sauerkraut, and kombucha, which they claim has helped their own health.
How did you feel when you started eating fermented foods? The more I incorporated fermented foods, the more energy I did have.
Studies have shown probiotics may be effective for digestive problems caused by antibiotics and irritable bowel syndrome. But doctors caution there isn't enough scientific evidence they improve other conditions, like urinary tract infections or allergies.
There's no question that the community of bacteria in our bodies is so important to our health. It's just that right now the science isn't where we need it to be in terms of telling us what we need to actually take.
Do you take a probiotic?
No, I don't.
Dr. Linda Lee tells her patients just eat a healthy, fiber-rich diet. Probiotic supplements aren't regulated by the FDA. Research shows some have fewer probiotics than advertised, or strains other than what's on the label. And watch for added sugar in probiotic-rich foods like yogurt. Doctors say probiotics probably won't hurt, but whether they're a miracle cure or marketing hype may come down to trusting your own gut.
Cheers.
Kristen Dahlgren, NBC News, Baltimore, Maryland.
We're back in a moment with a soon-to-be family behind the emotional proposal times two going viral. So, how did he pop the question? Every couple has a story about their engagement and their journey to becoming spouses, but for one Indiana couple, the story will be about how he popped the questions and made it a day to remember for his bride-to-be and her young daughter.
Two double purples.
From the very beginning, Grant Tribbett knew it was a package deal.
Okay.
When he started dating single mom Cassandra Rescher.
There's a lot of single parents out there. They struggle with dating and trying to find love. And then to find love for their children can be just as much as a challenge.
The couple met on Facebook. And 6 months later, Grant had an idea. Grant planned to propose to Cassandra in a local park.
I definitely knew something was up. I mean, I didn't know like what it was.
And arranged for a photographer friend to hide out and capture the moment.
Got down on one knee and then asked her if she'd marry me.
What happened next? Well, see for yourself. But maybe have a tissue box close by.
And I asked totally Gianna to, you know, hey, come here real quick. And then I got on, bit down, got on one knee for her, and just asked her if I could be her daddy and promised to love and protect her for all time. I presented her with a heart-shaped necklace, and she said thank you at first. I think you said, is that a yes or no? And she said yes, and then that's when she screamed, I finally get a daddy. Really, Doc?
A dream come true for 5-year-old Adriana, now a blushing daughter-to-be.
It feels happy, but it almost made me cry, but I can't, but I was so happy.
Thanks to a proposal almost too good to be true. couple is planning for a December wedding, and yes, Adriana will be the flower girl. When we come back, a magic milestone for the boy wizard has captured the imaginations of fans of all ages. Finally tonight, it may be hard to believe, especially if you have kids who grew up with a certain boy wizard. But today, the Harry Potter series turned 20. The first book in J.K. Rowling's epic was published on this day in 1997. The series would, of course, become a juggernaut, spawning a multi-billion dollar industry unto itself. Today, Rowling thanked fans on Twitter as many shared their favorite memories and their tributes. We appreciate your spending part of your evening with us. That is NBC Nightly News for this Monday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.